Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me for today's record is Movie Revolt Dan. Hello.
Hey.
And we are back. Yeah, long time no talk. We're trying to get back in the flow and in the rhythm of things, but it is a strange world out there, and it caused some complications from time to time, so as is with everybody. But I know a lot of podcasts are pumping out a lot of content, and some of the other ones are kind of doing some... It's almost like the shows, like the wrestling shows, like they all have like this recorded content that they're trying to pump out to like place hold for other things. So we're trying to do our best to give you guys some content, and today we're going to be talking about some stuff that you could be doing while you are on in quarantine or stuck in your house. Or I know a lot of people are going stir crazy and trying to find stuff to do. Maybe they've exhausted the shows that they were watching kind of heading into this, and they need some more ideas for some movies to watch. So that's what our goal is today, is to give you guys some movies that you can watch that are streaming on the various platforms, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, things of that nature. I know we just ended a couple things that we were watching on Netflix and Hulu, so we're looking for some new stuff as well. I just gotta, before we get into it though, can I just say, like, these platforms need a better way to find stuff. Like, especially Netflix, but in a way all of them, like, you can go online and look for like stuff that is streaming on Netflix and find a list that will help you like then go to Netflix and then type stuff in and find it. It's easier to do that than to find it through their actual services. Like, I wish there was an easier way than to just give me 1,000 different... it's like they have like the same 25 movies and they arrange it in 17 different lists on the main page. Like, I'm just scrolling through the same movies that you're rearranging in different forms for me.
Yeah, I honestly find it easier to use like Letterboxd to find than I find it to use the actual website itself. Yeah, it's like impossible to really find anything. I miss the days where you could literally just search like alphabetically or right. By year. Like, I don't know why you can't do that anymore. Like,
I wish by year was an option, because it is so much more handy for me, because usually for some reason I am looking for either current stuff of this year or like from a specific year, and I don't need to see what's like another movie that I watched. Like, that doesn't help me at all. Like, I just wish there was an easier way, but that is one of the nice features of Letterboxd. I will admit I've used that before to try to find like, where can I watch this. But kind of go through some of your process and then what you used as rules or criteria, or kind of what was your approach to come up with the five movies that you're going to give as suggestions for today.
Yeah, so basically when I was looking at movies, as we're also working on our Best of Decade list, and it kind of corresponded with this a little bit in the sense of looking for films that I feel like are really good. A lot of these maybe not, probably won't make any lists, but there were at least ones that I like. I really like these movies, but no one really talks about them. Some of them maybe to a certain extent. They might not be the best movies of all time, but I think they are ones that like deserve as much as a watch, or perhaps need a little bit more attention from some people. Because I know I've listened to other people talk about things to watch, and I heard someone mention, yeah, you can watch Seinfeld. And then I'm like, that's not... I know what Seinfeld is. I don't necessarily need to be informed about watching Seinfeld. So I try to find things that are somewhat knowledge. You know, people may know a little bit about them, but they're not like the big... huge yeah. films that people are well aware of, but you know, and I also try to get a variety. I thought about like not getting any sad or depressing movies, but as I look at my list, that's not necessarily the case at all. But you know, because I know people are looking for escapism, but I think ultimately these are some good films that offer you a different styles of filmmaking. So should be enjoyable.
Yeah, I've suggested us to watch like Contagion and some other things, and Amanda's not having anything of it. She didn't find the humor in that. Yeah, I kind of did the same type of thing. I was trying to avoid some of like the obvious ones, that because one thing that has happened, seems like these services have added a lot of content. out there during this whole time. They know people are looking for content, so I feel like there's been an influx of a lot of good quality stuff that's out there to watch. So I did try to avoid some of the obvious ones that I know are going to come up in the best of decade conversations, or some of the ones that I have talked a lot on over the years through our different top tens of the year or even the half decade list. So I tried to avoid some of those, especially some of the ones I've just talked about recently, like for 2019, of that nature, and tried to go off of ones that I just feel like have not got as much talk as I think that they deserve. So might be ones that we have mentioned in passing, but I haven't heard them come up a lot recently as far as when other people have been putting out their best of decade lists. So I wanted to kind of highlight those things as things that people could watch, things that might be forgotten a little bit, or just not quite that top tier movie list that you might see out there. So it's kind of how I tried to approach it. We'll see how well I did. I know I haven't seen quite as many under the radar films as a lot of people have, yourself probably included. So I'm very interested to hear your take on some of these films. So why don't you start us off, and what's one of the films that you think people should go stream, and what service can they watch it on?
So I guess this one probably is maybe the most well-known of the films I'm going to talk about, because it's by the director who just won the Best Picture of the Year and Best Director, and it's Mother by Bong Joon-ho, of course, who basically swept the Academy Awards when it came to his work for Parasite. Mother, though, came out, it's not the Jennifer Lawrence movie, this is from which I also really enjoy, but this came out in 2009 in South Korea, 2010 in America. This was, I think, the first experience I had with him as a director, perhaps. I'm not sure exactly. I might have watched The Host first, but it was close. But there's so much I really love about this movie, and if you enjoyed Parasite, the reason I brought it up, because I know a lot of people love Parasite, myself included, and if you really enjoyed that, I think you would also enjoy a lot about Mother. Mother doesn't necessarily get into the class struggles as much as Parasite does. There's some there, but it also just, it has his ability to just juggle tone in such an amazing way, where it's like, as I talked about, you know, it being a downer, and ultimately it kind of is. It's just like crime, drama, thriller. Ultimately, it's about a mom trying to search for answers as her mentally challenged son is wanted for murder. Basically, there is this brutal murder that happened, and it doesn't seem like something that he would do, because he's just upbeat, very, you know, seems like a pleasant kid. So, you know, trying to just see what all these answers, and takes her down this dark road, and it's encapsulated by what I think are the best bookends of any film I've ever seen. These two scenes that kind of start and end the film that encapsulate basically the entire journey in such a powerful way. And it just kind of shows you just the differentiation between where we start and then where we end up. So highly recommend seeing it. It's available on Hulu, which also Parasite is. So if you wanted to watch, if you haven't seen Parasite, you can also check that out. But I would also, if you enjoyed that, check out Mother. And I think you probably will find some enjoyment in that as well.
Yeah, and I had misinterpreted some of our messages offline, so I was under the impression that once upon a time that I was supposed to watch some of the films that you were bringing up. So we actually watched this one in preparation for what I thought I was doing, even though it was wrong. So Amanda and I watched this, and I did quite enjoy it. I think what I like about this one, a little bit like what you're talking about, with how not only they juggle tone, but they he keeps you on the edge of your seat, because you're not quite sure what direction you're going at any time. You're not quite sure, you know, who's not that there's always like these black and white, like good or bad characters, but you're not quite sure like which direction you're going, how you should feel about the characters you're watching. And I like kind of that beyond the edge of your seat type deal when it comes to that. Because the reason that the son is a little bit messed up is a little disturbing as well. Yeah. But yeah, we rather enjoy this. He's got a good filmography. I haven't seen the first one or two from him, but when you put this with Parasite, like you talked about, as well as my mind just went completely blank. The train one.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah, Snowpiercer. When you put those three together, that's quite a trio of films from this director that I think have a lot to like about them. So I definitely, if you liked Snowpiercer or if you liked Parasite, you should definitely agree with Dan, check out Mother. For my number five, this one got some attention when it came out in 2017 and definitely was talked about, I think, in cinephile circles or film Twitter, things of that nature. Haven't heard much about it in the last couple years, though, and I don't know how much like the mainstream audiences saw this. But I think it does deserve another bit of attention or just another look from some people. And it's streaming out there on Netflix, so I think it's a decent time to take this one in. And that would be Good Time by the Safdie brothers. I think, you know, a lot of people, I still get this when I talk to people that aren't like in our little circle of like movie lovers, when Robert Pattinson's names come up, I still hear people say, oh, I can't think of him as anybody but the guy from Twilight. And I'm like, oof, like, man, he has done so much other things. Like, that's, there's more than to life than what was shoved at you. So this is Robert Pattinson, doing a completely different look here. We have Barkhad Abdi, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Annie Safdie in this. And I think it's just an interesting take. Like, it's not something you've seen before. It's a unique crime thriller, I guess is how it's categorized. But I just think it's a fresh take, you know, for those people that complain about, oh, it's always, you know, recycled stuff that we get over and over again with the franchise films and sequels, etc. I think this is something that is worth a take. I don't know if it would make necessarily like my top 10 list, or it's not going to make maybe some of my best of the decade list. I wouldn't think, I haven't done that exercise yet, but I would be surprised if it's going to rank real high on there. But I still think it deserves a little bit more time and attention than it has gotten. So that is Good Time from 2017.
Yeah, that made my top 10 the year it came out. I really enjoyed that movie a lot. It is very disturbing. And yeah, I know when Pattinson was cast as Batman, it just, you know, of course the fanboy reaction was just like, you know, the kid from Twilight and
right,
everything like that. But I think at this point, moment in time, both him and Kristen Stewart have long proved themselves as great actors. You know, he did that, The Rover, he's done a number of films. But yeah, and unfortunately I still haven't seen Uncut Gems by the Safdies either. I really need to see it. I just unfortunately haven't.
We saw, that was one of like the half dozen films that we saw half of last year, because at one point, it's like there's a lot of screaming going on and a lot of yelling. And Amanda was like, I can't watch this anymore. We have to shut this off. So there's one that I need to finish on my own, and I just haven't had a chance because most of the stuff we do watch together. But I'd be interested to see how that one finished just based on what I liked about Good Time. So what do you have at your next one?
My next one comes from a kind of a classic filmmaker. One, you know, I don't know if people would put him as like a great filmmaker per se. He's made a lot of acclaimed films. I think he might be, in a way, even almost underrated. And it's from Peter Weir, who's directed films like The Truman Show, Witness, Dead Poets Society, Master Commander, The Far Side of the World, which I think is a really, it's, even though that's a movie nominated for Best Picture, it still doesn't really get the recognition it deserves. And the movie I have is actually his last film that he made, The Way Back. Not the Ben Affleck film that just came out earlier this year. This is a different movie with the same title. And it has really an incredible cast. The story behind it is, it's your classic survival tale. These people, it's happening during kind of the height of Russia and the Soviet Union. They escape from a Siberian gulag, and they basically try to travel thousands of miles to find freedom to India. And it's mostly just like that harrowing journey of them trying to survive in the worst conditions imaginable, from like high mountains to, you know, dry desert. And it's just classic filmmaking that you get for someone like Peter Weir. Like the type of film, like, I really hate the phrase movies that they don't make anymore, but I feel like that kind of is the case with The Way Back. And maybe because it got no attention whatsoever, it just came and went. The cast includes Colin Farrell, Ed Harris, Saoirse Ronan. I can never say her name correctly.
For sure, yeah.
Jim Sturgis, Mark Strong, or some of the, you know, which, you know, maybe not the hugest names ever, but really strong cast when it comes to, you know, acting talent there. And, you know, with a great director. Again, not like the greatest movie. It's not like rewriting the book on how to do a film like this. It's just really well executed. And, you know, thinking of something like, kind of like The Great Escape, you know, those movies that are, you know, it's taking place on location. You know, this isn't CGI. This is filmmaking that is there. People going to those locations, kind of getting the real feel of that type of film, which, you know, I feel like today you're not going to take people and travel to those locations. You're just going to do it in CGI. And something about actually seeing it in place, even though this came out, you know, 10 years ago, it feels like a more like a movie of the 70s or something like that, in the way it's executed. And, you know, hasn't made a movie since then, because I think this was a pretty giant bomb. I don't think it really made any, it didn't make any money, really. It was nominated for one Oscar, I think, for cinematography, if I'm not mistaken. Makeup, oddly enough. it's, you know, it's an enjoyable, kind of impressive feat. And if you're looking for that type of movie, and it's available right now on both Hulu and Prime, if you have those services.
I have to check that one out, because I like him as a director and I like the cast that you rattled off, and it just kind of was one that I missed as I went through. And it's odd that they just put out another movie with the same name.
Yeah, I guess because no one knows that, and it also makes it even harder to find, because it's like you look the way back up and it's the most recent film. Oh, I should also mention it's also available on Hoopla. The Hoopla is, it's, you know, since it's a library service, it depends on what your library has. Okay. But if you have that, which is a great service, like if you, my library doesn't use Hoopla, but a lot do. And then especially now, since you can't go anywhere, it's basically, you know, Netflix through your library, and you can watch films through it. You can even get comic books through it as well. So check out your local library and see, like, if you're trying to find some stuff and you don't want to pay for it, you know, it's a good service to use.
Thanks. Nice. For my next one, I was going to put a movie by this director on here, but I realized that I watched it and it is not available on any of the streaming services that I could find currently. I don't know if it was at one point or if I watched this in some other means, but I'm going to go with a different movie that's directed by the same person, because I think both of them are relevant and both of them are maybe needing to be revisited by those that are putting on their best of decade lists. And I'm talking about director Jeff Nichols. Who had the two movies that I would consider both worthy of a rewatch these days are Take Shelter and Mud. I recently watched Take Shelter for the first time and was very impressed by it. I do not see it as listed as streaming currently. Maybe I'm incorrect on that one, but I checked most of the major services and I don't think it is. But Mud is streaming, and that is streaming on Netflix. And that's a Matthew McConaughey film with Ty Sheridan, Sam Shepard, Reese Witherspoon, etc. From 2012. Take Shelter was from 2011. Those back-to-back years where I thought Jeff Nichols did a great job, now that I've seen Take Shelter, of putting out two very well put together films. And I'm just a huge Matthew McConaughey fan, so I think his role in this is probably one of my, towards the top of his filmography as far as my favorite roles of his. But I could watch him just about do anything. That's why I'm even entertained by his commercial work. But I just think this one's a good take. I like the relationships that are developed between McConaughey, who is kind of like this mysterious, strange enigma of a man, and then how he is interacting with these two 14-year-old boys played by Ty Sheridan, like I mentioned before, and Jacob Laughlin. And I just think it's a good film that really kind of delves into some of that, some of those relationships and dynamics. And I don't want to give too much away, but I think it's definitely worth for watching for anybody that is a Matthew McConaughey fan or likes any of other Jeff Nichols films.
Yeah, I really actually remember seeing, oddly enough, I saw Mud in the drive-in. And I really love that movie. It's just, yeah. I'm a fan of Jeff Nichols. Like, again, he's not really like Peter. I was going to say it's kind of like Peter Weir, but that's not really the case. But he definitely has a certain style to him. Right. And the characters have a lot of personality. Yeah, that's a really good movie. And that was like part of the McConaissance, but, you know, when he was.
Yeah, absolutely. He hasn't come out with a movie since 2016. He did Loving and Midnight Special. He hasn't had anything since, but I'm interested to see what he does next.
Yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of Midnight Special, but I still think...
Me neither.
He's still great. Even though I didn't love it, you can definitely tell he's a strong filmmaker. My next film, it comes from... this was a 2016 film from I believe, first-time director in Hope Dickerson Leach, and it's called The Leveling. It's a story about basically it's a father-daughter story where Ellie Kendrick plays Clover, who is this character that has basically left home for some years. She's become a veterinarian, but after learning that her brother has passed away, potentially what it seems like from suicide, she comes back home, and it's, you know, classic story of you can't come home again. Her family has a farm. And as she's there, she's kind of learning and discovering just how bad of a situation it has become. You know, she's really kind of trying to understand what exactly would drive her brother just to suicide, because it's not necessarily the person that she knew. And she just is unraveling of kind of realizing what's really happening and seeing this reconciliation of her and her father who have a contentious relationship. Again, this is, I would say, a bit of a downer movie, as I talked about, you know, more uplifting films, but it's just so well acted and directed. And again, it's one, I think, that got a lot of attention, I think, overseas in Europe and especially in United Kingdom. And I think it was nominated for a BAFTA, if I'm not mistaken, for up-and-coming filmmakers, because I definitely think that, yes, it was a few BAFTAs, one for writing, and it was nominated for directing as well. And I can certainly see it. And I really hope that, you know, we get more from Hope Dickerson-Leach, because when it comes to directing actors, really fantastic, because it's a very, in a way, you can see some similarities to someone like Jeff Nichols, because it's very of a certain place. Like, you know, these are people that, you know, live on the earth and going through some really tough times. You know, there's been major floods, and the farm is like falling apart in a way, and kind of dealing with almost a newfound depression and how they're trying to, you know, survive. So it's just that contentious relationship of, in kind of, you know, seeing how sometimes, you know, you're what you thought, what happens when you leave, like, especially I personally related to a lot, because when you you leave a certain situation, like where you grew up, and you kind of just feel like it gets frozen in time, and then when you come back to it and you see that, no, it's actually kind of, it's nothing like you remember, and maybe it's gone through some really tough times, you just realize, just, you know, you feel like you've really disconnected yourself from where you came from. And that hit me personally. And I think, especially looking at the situation we're in now, I think it speaks volumes as well. But it's available on a few platforms right now, on Prime Video and Canopy. It pops up on Netflix here and there. Like, it's one of those that, like, it's, I watched it through Netflix only not too long ago, but it's not there anymore. But I feel like it kind of, you know, I feel like there's some that just do the traveling of services.
Right.
Right now it's on Prime and Canopy, and I'm, you know, if you don't have those, give it some time, and I'm sure it'll show back up on Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting, because I've definitely felt that whole thing of going back to somewhere where you knew, and whether it's just like a scale thing where it's like, oh, I remember this being so much bigger or so much, you know, different, or whether it's a more of a time has taken its toll on something, like, you know, a house or a building or something like that, and it's like, oh, this is where we used to do this. And I definitely can feel that, so I'd be interested in checking that one out as well. For my next film, I kind of wanted to highlight, for me, it's almost like maybe this subgenre or niche genre has existed before, but I feel like it's something that's fairly new, that I've seen a few examples of here in the last 5 years or so. And that is kind of taking what would be maybe our generation or even the next generation's obsession with fandoms, or with pop culture, or with things of that nature, where you have all of these different groups that, or people that become very fixated on a piece of pop culture, whether it be a television show, a movie, or some other type of thing. And then their life can be shaped by that attachment, or by that journey to come to terms with what's real and what's entertainment and things of that nature. I think of three examples, I guess, that would highlight what I'm talking about. One of them is the film that I'm going to be bringing up, but we saw it last year with like a Peanut Butter Falcon, where you have somebody that is kind of attached or obsessed with the wrestling genre, and then goes on this journey to try to, you know, achieve that or find that, kind of the journey of who they come into contact with, and whether the end result is what they were looking for or what they learn about the way. I just find that all fascinating. We also saw that a little bit with, I guess, in a little bit of a different way, because it's a little bit more twisted, but with Bigsby Bear, maybe you could put that in there. But the one I'm thinking of for me for this list would be the 2017 film Please Stand By. I know I talked about this again when we did our top 10, I believe, for 2017, but comedy drama film directed by the Australian director Ben Lewin, starring Dakota Fanning, and she is a autistic woman that is fixated on Star Trek. So I also thought it might speak to, you know, the crowd here that we have at Cinema Geeks or at Geekcast Radio. For those that haven't seen it, I still think this is worth a view. I know it didn't receive overwhelmingly, you know, huge positive receptions. I think it's like a 60% maybe on Rotten Tomatoes, or, you know, kind of in that. Not bad reviews, but not overly fantastic. But I still think I'm fascinated by this type of story where we're taking someone that is obsessed or attached to something like this, and then they go on this journey. In this case, she's has written a 450-page Star Trek script that is entering a contest that I believe it was Paramount was doing as far as a screenwriting contest, and kind of just that journey. And if the journey is more important than the end result, or what you kind of learn throughout that. And I know in this case, I guess in all three movies, you're dealing with one person that who was kept sheltered, almost kidnapped in a way. You have another person that was dealing with Down syndrome. And then obviously this one, you have an autistic woman. But not that it has to be that. I mean, there's plenty of people that don't have any of those afflictions that still have that fixation on a certain thing, and kind of how healthy it is, or how unhealthy it is, or kind of what that journey is like for them to realize when they come into contact with that person or with that event or with that thing that they've been fixated on, and kind of how that transforms their life. So I don't know. I just think this one's a fascinating film, and I think it's worth a watch. And I think Dakota Fanning does a really good job in it.
Nice. That's one I have not seen. I think I do remember you talking about that, but
this is available. Please Stand By is available on Hulu.
Check that. I have not seen that. It seems like something I might like. So
yeah,
I'm actually gonna go to the world of animated films, and this is again a movie I talked about before. I think when we were doing our top 10 animated films of the decade so far, back like 5 years ago, which is crazy to say out loud. But I think it's still kind of oddly timely in a way. It's called Wrinkles. It's originally a Spanish film, I believe, and it's based upon a Spanish comic book. It takes place in a nursing home, which I think it's timely for a lot of reasons. Obviously, with COVID right now, nursing homes are huge focal point because of how hard it's hit some of those. And it really puts some perspective in, because I think sometimes it's, you know, again, talking about situations where you're kind of separated from and don't understand. I think that's the case a lot of times with nursing homes with a lot of people. But it's ultimately about the friendship between these two individuals who, you know, are having, you know, in a way, having, when the movie begins, kind of a time of their lives in a way where they're still kind of enjoying things, but there's this ever present kind of fear of ending up in what they call is like the certain floor for those that are called, it's the assisted floor for those that are dealing with Alzheimer's, and they kind of befriend a new person who comes who's, you know, on the cusp of having to, you know, travel to that floor, and it's their day to day and almost their attempt to escape in a way. And, you know, I know a lot of people have that feeling right now of wanting to escape and feeling trapped into a certain place. So I think there's a lot to relate here. And it's also just really sweet as well. In there is both a dubbed as well as, a subtitle version of it. And I think when it comes to especially animated films, foreign animated films, sometimes the dubbing can go either way. It's just really bad or doesn't make sense. I think either is fine. It's available right now, I think Netflix and Hulu, as well as Hoopla, if you wanted to watch it. And it was available shortly on IMDb, their TV, their service. But it's not there currently, which I don't know if anyone's ever used. It's actually kind of not too bad. It's you do get commercials with it, which is a little annoying, but they're not too egregious. And it's kind of like it reminds me of watching movies back in the day when I would watch like a movie would pop on like Saturday afternoons after all the cartoons. You'd have a movie come on. I feel like it reminds me of those with just the quality isn't the greatest in the sense of like. You know, usually it's not really great HD, but it's weird seeing commercials and movies since I haven't really, you know, with Netflix, you don't really do that anymore. It's almost a nostalgia to it. But ultimately, I think this is just a good movie about friendship and really undersung animated film. It's in 2D animation, again, which we don't get nearly enough of anymore. Oh. Animation's really crisp and strong as well. So advise checking it out.
Awesome. I'll have to check that one out. That one was not on my radar at all, and I try to watch as much animated stuff as I can, so I will definitely check that one out. For my final two films that I'm going to be talking about, just as a preface there, there are going to be ones that are a little bit more well-known, probably a little bit more people have seen them, but I'm trying to highlight them because I still don't think they get enough talk. Like, I still don't think they're popping up enough in people's list or just being talked about in general or just coming up at all, and I think they deserve a little bit more attention. So for my first one, you know, when it comes to like the action thriller genre, I think this last decade has been dominated by the likes of Mad Max, Fury Road, as well as the Mission Impossible films, as well as like the John Wick franchise. I think those have kind of like really dominated the topics when it comes to those, you know, straight action films. And I think a film like this has kind of gotten left beside, or, you know, just forgotten about in a way. And I would actually put this as David Ayer's best film. I know he did Training Day and I enjoyed Fury, but I think End of Watch is his best film. And that's the 2012 action thriller that I'm talking about with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena. I know it did get a good reception. It does have like over 80%, 85% or something like that on Rotten Tomatoes. And I know it overall got received well, but I think that was in, you know, 2012. And then since then I've heard very little about it. And I think it deserves to be in that discussion, you know, when it comes to whether you're talking about police procedural films or action thriller films or things of that nature. I think the pacing of it was really done well. I think we got to see a really great performance by the two main stars, Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena, almost before they were as big as they are now, it seems like. And I just think more people should see this film, and I think it deserves to be talked about more, I guess, when we're looking back at some of the best action films of the last decade. So End of Watch was my next pick. Meta is streaming on Netflix.
I remember really enjoying End of Watch, and sometimes the found footage works better with certain genres. I think when it comes to like a cop drama like that, it makes sense because we're used to seeing that type of thing with like cops and all those cop shows, and so it felt really natural. But also, as you mentioned, the action was really intense with that. It's that's quite a good movie. My last film, I'm just going to go to the world of documentaries. I know since kind of the COVID situation has occurred, everyone's been talking about Tiger King, which I've watched and enjoyed, but I think even I'm kind of getting sick of people talking about it. But there are tons of really crazy documentaries out there about people that, you know, insane stories that get weirder and weirder. And one that came to mind is this film called Kung Fu Elliot from 2014. It's available for streaming on Prime as of right now. And when it comes to documentaries, there's usually two documentaries. Like, either you have a documentary that's good because it's a good story, a documentary that's good that's because it's well made, and, you know, eventually, and sometimes you get the really great ones, which are a combination of both. And I think Kung Fu Elliot is not particularly an extremely well made documentary, but it is this fascinating story that gets weirder and weirder as it goes along. And it's about this Kung Fu legend from Canada and / filmmaker in his journey to basically make movies. I don't know if you ever watched the movie American Movie, which I would also recommend seeing, which is about this aspiring filmmaker that his dreams don't necessarily match with his talent, but you kind of root for him just because he wants it so badly, and he dedicates his life to making this movie, which ends up not being the greatest thing in the world, but it's kind of like The Room, but more charming in a way. With Kung Fu Elliot, it's different because it starts off that way. It feels like this is going to be about, you know, his film, like his career, and he seems like a normal guy when things start. But as you watch the movie, things unravel further and further, and things get weirder and weirder and weirder as they go on. And it just, you know, it's kind of like similar to Tiger King. That's like this giant car wreck that you can't turn away from. It kind of becomes like that as well, as you just see like this thing's not making sense, and it by the end of it, like it's ends up being completely different type of story than what it set out to be. So that was enjoyable. It's like I said, it's not the most extremely well made film of all time, but if you just enjoy watching bizarre stories, which seem to be all the trend right now, I would definitely advise checking it out. It's only like 80, 90 minutes long as well, so it's a quick watch.
What was that? What service was that one on?
That's right now. It's available on IMDb. It's available on Amazon Prime, and it's the only thing I can actually. What's weird is that it's unavailable. It's available on Amazon Prime, and I was trying to see if it was available anyplace else by using Just Watch, but it doesn't show up on Just Watch. So which is kind of funny.
Gotcha.
It's, so it might be available on Netflix. I don't believe so, but right now you can stream it for free on Prime. There you go.
All right. My other pick, just kind of like End of Watch, it was one that was received well when it came out, and I know I have sung its praises multiple times over the years, but I think you can almost look at the award circuit that year to kind of see what happened to it, because it was nominated for a couple Golden Globes and then nothing from the Academy Awards, and I think at that point people just stopped talking about it for the last 10 years, and I just think it's such a great film, and I know that some people have a problem with it, but I feel like that's a closed minded approach to this subject matter, maybe. But I'm talking about the film directed by Jonathan Levine, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Seth Rogen, Anna Kendrick, Bryce Dallas Howard, and Angelica Houston, and that is 2011 comedy 50-50. I know that it's dealing with cancer, and I know that a lot of people right now probably don't want to deal with that type of subject matter, but like I said, this is a comedy, so this is a way to try to cope with traumatic events or with tragic events. And like, you know, obviously we're all going through something that is a little depressing or a little different. And I think this might give people another way to look at things or to find a different perspective. And it wasn't done like in a way to try to be funny for the sake of being funny. This was written by somebody who was basing this whole movie on their own experience with cancer. And obviously one of the characters is based on that person who wrote the movie. And I think that's why they were saying like a lot of times that this didn't get much Academy Award nomination, because they said, you know, a lot of people were upset or found it distasteful that they were using such a grave matter as cancer to form a comedy about. But I think this movie does a very good job of blending the dramatic and the comedic elements of this. I can understand people not feeling like, oh, I don't want to watch a movie, you know, that's focusing on somebody who has cancer and their struggles with that, or, you know, whether they're going to survive or not and things of that nature. But I think if you give it a chance, you're going to be surprised at how they balance all these things and what you're going to get out of it. But I think it's a good thing for this day and age to find something that seems like a very depressing subject matter and find a different way to look at things and a different way to cope with things and get through things. So I cannot stop singing the praises of 50-50. I think more people should see it and more people should talk about it. And maybe this is a good time for people to watch it. And it is available streaming on Hulu.
It's weird that people would find it distasteful because it's literally based on the screenwriter's real life situation.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, right. I don't know. It's not, and I don't think it's ever making light of cancer by any means.
No, not at all. I think just people think they're like, oh, I know somebody that has died from cancer. I'm not going to watch a comedy based on cancer. I think that's as far as people open their mind to it. It's like, well,
yeah,
it's one way to look at things.
It's weird. I think there's much more, I guess, nuance to it than that. Yeah, obviously, because it's trying to find a way to, you know, relate to your best friend who's, you know, having a death sentence and potential right. death sentence and how he was able to overcome it. Yeah, I don't know. That seems odd to me, but it's an odd world. So what are you going to do? But
right. Dan, did you have any other ones that you might want to just throw out name wise that we won't have a lot of time to actually discuss, but the other things that you thought were worth watching that are streaming?
Yeah, as well as some films that we mentioned that, I mean, my top 10 last year, The Nightingale is available on Hulu. Again, that's got a decent amount of attention. It's weird talking about like a Batman movie, but I got a free trial for DC Universe, which not the greatest service in the world, but I did rewatch Batman Returns, and I don't know why I'm bringing that up, but it just came to my mind. And I don't know, I'm a big fan of like I was getting in a mood to rewatch like 90s comic book movies and just seeing how much they've changed. That and Dick Tracy, which is available, I think, on on Stars right now, and just I don't know if
we just watched that. That's awesome.
There's just something about that aesthetic of the '90s comic book movie that I find there's like a surreal element to it where I feel it's almost more comic book accurate in a way than where I feel like comic book movies now are trying to be more real life.
The way that Dick Tracy uses like color palettes and things of that nature are just fantastic.
So I don't, as I'm just thinking of random things that came to mind. Another movie, again, following the lines of not great, but it's a fun little film that's available on a lot of different platforms, on Hulu and Amazon. It's weird, again, going from a Batman but to a WWE movie, but it was pretty good, with Fighting With My Family.
Yeah.
That was fun. Again, nothing fantastic, but I feel like sometimes we're in the, I don't know about you, but I've often just been in the mood to watch something easy and quick to watch that's like doesn't require a lot of brain power, and that is certainly the case. But yeah, that's really all that's currently coming to my mind.
Okay. Yeah, I like to Fight In With My Family too. I didn't go in with any expectations, and I thought it was a fun little couple hours spent with that movie, so I enjoyed that one. And I wasn't even a WWE fan when Paige was big, so I didn't even really know the person it was based off of, but I enjoyed it. Some other movies I thought of, as far as Netflix go, Ballad of Buster Scruggs is still out there. I know this, I believe, was on your list that year, but Morris from America is streaming on Netflix still.
There was one on the award show, I think, for Best Father-Son Duo or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it was 2009, but I had Moon on there as well, which is on Netflix. If you haven't seen that one, good time to catch up with that one. Another 2009 film that was on Hulu that I sang the praises of back in the day, but that would be Up in the Air with George Clooney, as well as Minding the Gap, the documentary, is on Hulu. One that kind of really flew under the radar from last year, I believe, was Where'd You Go, Bernadette. I'm not saying it's a great film or anything, but I enjoyed that one, and that one's streaming on Hulu. I know it really didn't get much attention at all and kind of just kind of snuck by last year, but I think that one's worth a watch on Hulu if you're looking for something. Also, Hunt for the Wilder People is on Hulu. So I think that's definitely worth a watch. As far as Amazon Prime, you also have stuff like Bone Tomahawk and High Life, which are currently on there. I think all of those. And then just to highlight real quickly as my last couple, I mentioned these in my 2019 top 10, so that's why I didn't go over them again. But Teen Spirit and Wild Rose, both of those music-oriented movies from last year, are both available. I didn't write down which streaming services. I think I want to say it's either Netflix or Hulu. That's where I got most of mine. But those two are available. So if you haven't checked out Teen Spirit or Wild Rose, it's a good chance to do that as well.
Speaking of Hulu, I haven't finished it, but I think I've watched the first 20 minutes of Blinded by the Light. I've liked what I've seen so far, but I can't recommend it because I haven't finished it.
So those are some films that you should definitely check out on the different streaming services if you've run out of times to watch Tiger King. I still haven't seen that, but Amanda has. But hopefully that'll give you some ideas of something that you can check out during this odd time where you're looking for more stuff to entertain yourself in the house versus going out and about like you shouldn't be. But hopefully that gives you some ideas. Let us know if you like any of those or what other films that you have found streaming that you think are worth a watch. You can comment on that stuff by either tweeting to us. You can tweet at the show, which is at Cinema Geekcast. You can tweet me specifically at Optimus Solo, or Dan, what's your Twitter?
DXO_Dan.
Or you can go to the website, which is geekcastradio.com, and just find the episode post, and you can click right there and let us know what other things that we should be watching that are streaming currently. As Dan said, we are going to be getting into some of our best of decade lists here as the year progresses. So we did this, like Dan said, almost 6 years ago now. I guess it was 5 years ago now, where we talked about our best of the decade so far list, and we broke that down into different genres like action and comedy and things of that nature, comic book, etc. So we're going to do something similar to that going through here for the rest of 2020. So look out for those episodes. We might have some special guests along the way to help us highlight some of the best films that have come out in the last decade. Dan, anything else that you wanted to talk about before we wrap this one up?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, and well, Dan and I might get together and do some another episode on Geekcast Radio. Might be doing a revisit of an episode we did quite a while ago, Realm of Star Wars. It might be fun, so keep an eye out for that as well. But until then, tune in next time for another chance to listen to The Cinema Geeks.